ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरयेत् ततो जायमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः गोविंदाय नमो नमः। हरे कृष्ण। सग्रंथ श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 13 वर्स 61 तत्रोद्वहत् पशुपवंश शिशुत्वनाट्यम् ब्रह्माद्वयम् परमनन्तम् अगाधबोधम् वत्सान् सखिन् इव पुरा परीतो विचिन्वद् एकं सपाणिकवलं परमेष्ठ अचष्ट तत्रोद्वहत् पशुपवंशशिशुत्वनाट्यं ब्रह्माद्वयं परमनन्तमगाधबोधम् अद्वयं परमनन्तमगाधबोधम् वत्सान् सखिनिव पुरा परीतो विचिन्वद् एकं सपाणिकवलं परमेष्ट चष्ट तत्रोद्वहत् पशुपवंशशिशुत्वनाट्यम् ब्रह्माद्वयं परमनन्तमगाधबोधम् वत्सान् सखिनिव पुरा परीतो विचिन्वत् एकं सपाणिकवलं परमेष्ट चष्ट तत्रोद्वहत् पशुपवंशशिशुत्वनाट्यम् ब्रह्माद्वयं परमनन्तमगाधबोधम् वत्सान् सखिनिव पुरा परितो विचिन्वद् एकं सपाणिकवलं परमेष्ट चष्ट Vaishnavis. Whatever translation. Tatra, there in Vrindavan, Udvahat, assuming Pashupavam Shashishutvanatyam, the play of being a child in a family of cowherd men. Another of Krishna's name is Gopal, he who maintains the cows. Okay. Brahma, the absolute truth. Advayam, without a second. Param, the supreme. Anantam, unlimited. Agadhabodham, possessing unlimited knowledge. Vatsan, the cows. Radha Gopinath Bhagwan Sakhin and his friends, the boys. Ivapura, just as before. Paritaha, everywhere. Vichinvat, searching. Ekam, alone, all by himself. Sapani Kavalam, with a morsel of food in his hand. Morsel of food in his hand. Parameshti, Lord Brahma. Achashta, saw. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge and who is unlimited. Assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men, and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the cows and his cowherd friends. Purport. The word Agadhabodham means full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. The Lord's knowledge is unlimited, and therefore, one cannot touch where it ends, just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence in comparison to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? On my passage to America, how insignificant the ship was, like a matchbox in the midst of the ocean. Krishna's intelligence resembles the ocean, for one cannot imagine how vast it is. The best course, therefore, is to surrender to Krishna. Don't try to measure Krishna. The word Advayam, meaning one without a second, is also significant. Because Brahma was overcast by Krishna's Maya, he was thinking himself the supreme. In the material world, everyone thinks, I am the best man in the world. I know everything. One thinks, why should I read Bhagavad Gita? I know everything. I have my own interpretation. Brahma, however, was able to understand the supreme personality, that the supreme personality is Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Another of Krishna's names, however, therefore, is Parameshwara. Now, Brahma saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, not demonstrating his opulence, but standing just like an innocent boy with some food in his hand, loitering with his cowherd boy friends, cows and cows. Brahma did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuja, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. Nonetheless, he could understand that although Krishna was not demonstrating his power, he was the same supreme person. People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful, Brahma could understand that the same wonderful person was present like an ordinary child, although he was the master of the whole creation. Thus Brahma prayed, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. You are the original person, the cause of everything. I bow down to you. That was his realization. Tamaham bhajami. This is what is wanted. Vedeshu durlabham. One cannot reach Krishna merely by Vedic knowledge. Adurlabham atma bhakta. But when one becomes a devotee, then one can realize him. Brahma therefore became a devotee. In the beginning he was proud of being Brahma, the Lord of the universe. But now he understood. Here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply as an insignificant agent. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor. Because Brahma had some false prestige, thinking that he had some power, Krishna showed him his real position. A similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. When Krishna's doorman informed Lord Krishna that Lord Brahma had arrived, Krishna responded, "Which Brahma? Ask him which Brahma." The doorman relayed this question and Brahma was astonished. "Is there another Brahma besides me?" he thought. When the doorman informed Lord Krishna, "It is four-headed Brahma," Lord Krishna said, "Oh, four-headed. Call others, show him." This is Krishna's position. For Krishna, the four-headed Brahma is insignificant, to say nothing of four-headed scientists. Materialistic scientists think that although this planet Earth is full of opulence, all others are vacant. Because they simply speculate, that is their scientific conclusion. But from the Bhagavatam we understand that the entire universe is full of living entities everywhere. Thus it is the folly of the scientists that although they do not know anything, they mislead people by presenting themselves as scientists, philosophers and men of knowledge. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnamamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchina Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So today morning, on the sacred day of Gopashtami, along with several other holy occasions, we are discussing a very apt pastime from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which illustrates the distinctiveness, the uniqueness of God when He manifests Himself as Krishna. So, I'll discuss this class in three parts. First, I will discuss about the significance of Krishna's appearance in a human-like form at the highest level in Goloka, which is related with this particular pastime and purport of Srila Prabhupada. Then I'll discuss the specific pastime of Gopashtami. And then I will discuss the general significance of a rites of passage in the life of a devotee. The Gopashtami indicates a rite of passage. So how that relates to us as devotees, that will be the third part of the class. So in the Vedanta Sutra, one of the very important sutras is Nara Leela Kaivalyam. The Kaivalya, the absolute truth, performs pastimes as Nara Leela, as a human being. So, generally speaking, the impersonalists, the jnanis, think that the Vedanta Sutra talks about an non-differentiated, homogeneous, impersonal absolute truth. But This particular section of the Vedanta Sutra, Baldev Vidyabhushan comments extensively on it, describes how that absolute truth in his highest manifestation performs human-like pastimes, Naralila. And that is illustrated most vividly, most completely, most endearingly in the manifestation of God as Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada quotes in the purport over here, Krishna is not manifesting as Chaturbhuja. If we see a person with a Chaturbhuja, it's not very easy to relate with that person as a human being. We understand, oh, this is the Supreme Lord. But Krishna as God conceals his divinity so that there can be the reciprocity of love at the most summit, at the highest intensity. So, actually, Brahmaji knows Krishna to be God. In fact, it is he who appealed, please appear. And not only did he appear, he appealed to the Lord to appear. When the Lord appeared in the womb of Devaki, he was among the prominent gods who came and offered prayers. So, actually Brahmaji knows that Krishna is God. But, how is it that if Brahmaji has himself prayed to Krishna, to the Lord to appear, and he has known that the Lord has appeared here, and Brahmaji, it is described, he has partial omniscience. Krishna alone has complete omniscience. But the various universal administrators like Brahmaji, Yamaraj and Lord Shiva, they are given empowerment according to their services. So Brahmaji has partial omniscience in terms of being able to know whatever is required for the functioning of the universe. So how can Brahmaji forget that this is the same Lord I had prayed to? And that is the same Lord who has appeared here. Actually, that is that forgetfulness of Brahma is the result of two things. One factor Srila Prabhupada highlights over here is the overcoming of the soul by false ego in the world because of material prestige. The other factor is the extraordinarily human-like pastimes of Krishna. So, when Brahmaji goes to the Kshira Sagar and prays, he's prominently conceiving of the absolute truth as Vishnu. And as Vishnu, he's thinking Sahasra Shirsha Purusha, that absolute truth who has thousands of heads and thousands of legs. So he is conceiving of the absolute truth in a mood of majesty. And that's why when that same absolute truth manifests without any majesty in a mood of intimacy, Brahmaji becomes bewildered. So, actually, we always say Krishna's form is not material, and that is true. Ajopisana vyatma bhutanam ishvaropisan prakritim swamadishtaya sambhavamyatma mayaya. In 4.6 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that sambhavamyatma mayaya, by my internal potency I manifest in the form that you see me in, Arjuna. So, there is the material level, there is the impersonal level, and there is the transcendental level. So now, the transcendental level also features Krishna manifesting in a human-like form. So normally speaking, when we move from the material to the spiritual level, then we generally try to understand, okay, all the forms are illusory. Oh, I have to go beyond all these forms. So that's what the impersonalists try to do. That's what the intellectuals who are spiritually inclined try to do. Even scientists try to go beyond the variety that encounters our eye to the underlying principles. Now, thousands of people saw fruits falling. But what was the speciality of Newton? That he went from the visible specific to the invisible universal. Okay, this fruit is falling. Why is it falling? So generally, intellectual people want to see patterns beyond specifics. Okay, there are so many specific things happening in this world, but what is the underlying pattern? That is the general intellectual nature. So what happens is, on the intellectual path, one sees the diversity in this world, and in one sense, just as scientists are material intellectuals, the impersonalists are spiritual intellectuals. Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki jai. So, scientists generally try to infer visible from the visible to the invisible, but for them, the invisible is also material. So, they don't consider a spiritual invisible. So the impersonalists go from the visible material to the spiritual invisible. But they think that variety is a material product. And actually, at the spiritual level, when I go beyond the specific variety to the universal oneness, then there will be no variety. And that's why this verse has this word, Brahma Advayam Paramanantam Agadhavodam, Brahma Advayam. That is non-different, that absolute truth is non-different. So normally we all talk about this unity in diversity. That is true. So that is the effort, because we so much see diversity in the world. You know, there is, you know, the nature of the mind is to try to see patterns. By pratyaksha we see bhed. By anuman we want to see abhed. By pratyaksha we see, okay, there is this difference, this difference, this difference. Every person seems to be different. But by anuman, by inference, we try to find out what is the abhed. What is the similar underlying pattern under everything? So the impersonal is, by doing this sort of inference from the material pratyaksha, from the material variety to the impersonal Brahman, come to the idea of oneness. And related with the idea of oneness is the idea of God as the majestic controller of everything and everyone. So that is certainly true. But beyond that, Srila Prabhupada writes in Aishopanishad purport that many of the demigods are not very clear about what is actually the relationship between Krishna and Brahman. Nate vidhu surgana, name vidhu surgana, Krishna says in 10.2 in the Bhagavad Gita. And similarly, muhiyanti yat suraya, 1.1.1 in the Bhagavatam it is said. That even the demigods find it difficult to understand. So, now beyond this, so we normally talk about unity in diversity. Yeah, that is true, but the bhakti universe is about diversity in unity. The bhakti universe is about diversity in unity. There is unity in the sense that everything in the spiritual realm is Satchitananda. There is unity not just in constitution, in terms of everything being Satchitananda. There is unity also in purpose. Everybody there is interested in serving Krishna, loving Krishna, reciprocating love and service with Krishna. So, but within this unity of nature and purpose, there is diversity in terms of rasa, in terms of emotional reciprocations of love with Krishna. And this is something which is quite difficult to understand. So Krishna's form is not material, but it is human-like. Actually, that is not correct. Actually, it is our form which is Krishna-like. It is not that Krishna's form is human-like. The world is made as a reflection of Krishna and the spiritual world. So our form is Krishna-like to some extent. So because Krishna's form is so disarmingly simple, sweet, ordinary, Brahmaji gets bewildered. So Krishna at the highest level, beyond Brahman, the Bhagavatam frequently uses the word Paratparaha. So para is Brahman, but Paratpara is transcendence beyond transcendence. So the transcendence to this world is Brahman, the transcendence beyond transcendence is Bhagavan. Para is the unity in diversity. Paratpara is the diversity in unity. So within that, Krishna performs these sweet pastimes, concealing his divinity so that there can be the reciprocity of love. And there Krishna acts just like an ordinary cowherd boy. And just as in our lives, there are rites of passage. Rites of passage means that there are some significant landmark events in a person's life. So those are celebrated as the person moves forward. So rite of passage essentially means, for example, say a thread ceremony for a person in a Vedic culture might be a rite of passage. Marriage is a very important rite of passage. So these are rites of passage. So for a cowherd community, the rite of passage which we are celebrating today is Gopashtami. That when Krishna moves from his Balalila to his Paugandalila, from he goes beyond the age of 5 and starts performing pastimes. So actually, if you look at the Srimad Bhagavatam 90 chapters, the sweetest in terms of most elevated rasa are the Madhurila pastimes. But the sweetest in terms of universal accessibility are his Balalila pastimes. The Madhurila pastimes are difficult for us to understand because we may misunderstand them to be material. In terms of accessibility, the Balalila pastimes are very sweet. So, in terms of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first reference to the Madhurila pastimes will be in chapter 19. And the more extensive focus will be between chapters 29 to 33, the Ras Panchadhyay. The Bal Leela pastimes, the home pastimes, and the forest pastimes. So the home pastimes are described till chapter 10. So if we want to look at the Bhagavatam's chronology, Gopashtami happened in chapter 11. Chapter 11 is called the boyhood pastimes of Krishna. So if you'll see, before this, most of Krishna's pastimes are at home. In the first three demons who came, Putana, Shaktasur and Trunavart, they all came inside the village of Vrindavan. And they tried to threaten and kill Krishna. And even the Damodar Leela happened inside the village of Vrindavan. From the 11th chapter onwards, Krishna starts going out. So Gopashtami marks Krishna starting to go out of not just the house, not just outside the courtyard, not just outside the village, but outside, not just outside the house into the village, but outside the village into the forest to graze the cows. So this happened in the 11th chapter. And we will see the demons who are killed after that. Aghasur's killing does not happen in the Vraja village. It happens outside. And that's why the Vrajavasis don't know about it. And then when Shukadeva Goswami tells that the Vrajavasis came to know about it after 1 year, then Shukadeva Goswami immediately asks, why 1 year? And then this Brahma Vimohan Leela is described in 13th and the 14th chapters. So this is a post-Gopashtami pastime. So this pastime is happening after Krishna has started taking care of the cow. So Anand Vrindavan Champu describes how this particular event happened. So one day when Krishna was around 5, at that time, then the Maharaj came in the evening to his home and he said to Krishna and Yashoda Mai were sitting. Krishna was on the lap of Yashoda Mai, and then the Maharaj said, Krishna, from tomorrow onwards, now you have grown up, you should go and start taking care of the cows. And you should go to the forest and start taking care of them. So Krishna became jubilant. He started jumping. Yes, yes. Children want to play and do a lot of fun. He became, yes, from tomorrow onwards I will go. Yashoda Mai was mortified. He said, what are you saying? You know, our child is so tender. He's so tender, and there are so many dangers that afflict him more than anyone else. Even when he is in the security of home, there are demons which come and attack, and there are trees which fall down. But at least when he's at home, we can try to protect him. But when he goes into the forest, what will happen? And you have hundreds of servants. Let them take care of the cows and cows. Why does your own child have to go? You are not an ordinary cowherd. You are the king of all the cowherds. No, Krishna will not go. I cannot tolerate the thought of Krishna leaving home and going to the forest. So when Yashoda Mai speaks her heart like this, then the Maharaj becomes grave and concerned. But Krishna becomes infuriated. He says, Mother, you are always spoiling my sports. I am bored staying at home. I want to go out. I was longing. When will I start going to the forest? And now father is allowing and you are not allowing me to go. No, whether you allow me or not, I am going. So Krishna becomes very assertive. And then seeing this, both Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai become very thoughtful. And Nanda Maharaj starts thinking that, you know, I cannot displease Krishna. At the same time, I cannot displease Yashoda Mai also. This is always the problem in the relationships. We have to balance. You know, how do we please all the different people who are involved in that relationship? So he starts thinking what to do. And then Yashoda Mai, seeing Krishna's insistence on going, she also becomes silent. And at that night, she starts thinking, you know, yes, ultimately, Krishna has to grow up. And Krishna has to go out. And Krishna has to go out. That is how he will grow up. And Yashoda Mai's concern is that if Krishna stays for sometime, he will have to go out. If he stays forever at home, if he never goes out to take care of the cows, how will he be considered grown up by others? And if he is not considered grown up by others, this is always the anxiety of the parents. And what is the anxiety? And who will give their daughter to marriage to Krishna? You know. Even when in Gopal Champu describes that when Balramji gets married to Revati, at that time the news comes to Nanda Maharaj. You know, there are always constantly messengers going on between Dwarka and Vrindavan. Tell what is happening. And then when Nanda Maharaj hears that Balramji has married, got married, he starts thinking, now Krishna also should get married. But then Balramji is the son of Vasudev. They all know that. You know, he's been entrusted in a transcendental, extraordinary way through transfer in the womb. But they know he's the son of Balram. He's the son of a Kshatriya. He thinks it's only right that Balramji married a Kshatriya girl. But then the Maharaj starts thinking, will Krishna marry a Kshatriya girl or will she marry a Vaishya girl? You know, so if he marries a Kshatriya girl, then he will be accepting Vasudeva and Devaki as his parents. If he marries a Vaishya girl, then he will be accepting us as his parents. So actually for the parents, the marriage of the children is a constant anxiety. And that is also a rasa in parenting. So Nashudamai starts thinking that yes, I must allow Krishna to go. And the next morning, Krishna is thinking, now I'll have to fight with Yashodamai. I'll be very stubborn. And Nanda Maharaj also thinking that, okay, how will I persuade Yashodamai? And Krishna, as Yashodamai is bathing Krishna, Krishna says, so to Krishna, today is the first day when you'll go to the forest. Please go very carefully. And Krishna is so surprised. He said, what happened? And then, when Nanda Maharaj hears this, he was also very surprised. But he is relieved in once, not just surprised. And then, as Krishna starts going to the forest, Yashodamai starts coming with him. And Nanda Maharaj starts coming with him. And Krishna is just thinking, the children, as long as they are in the presence of the parents, they cannot be as mischievous and naughty and as free as they want to be. As frolicsome as they want to be. So Krishna is thinking, Yashodamai, yes, I'll be safe. Now let me go. He says, yes, yes, you can go, I'll come behind you. He says, no, I want to go to the forest. He said, yes. One day I will come with you to the forest, from the next day I will not come. He says, no, I'll take care. And Balramji is with me, don't worry. He will take care of me. So Balramji says, yes, I'll take care of Krishna. So when, now Yashodamai knows Krishna is mischievous. But she thinks Balram is very responsible. He says, Balram, take care of Krishna. And then when she tells Balramji, take care of Krishna, he says, Balramji says, yes, I'll take care. Then she feels reassured. And then she comes back. And then it is described that, our acharya has described that, in Vrindavan, the Vrajavasis also worship. They don't worship Krishna as God because they think Krishna is just one of them. So Nanda Maharaj has his own Narasimhadev deity. And he worships Narasimhadev for the protection of Krishna. And actually, even the Vrajavasis from an external point of view seem to worship demigods also. Because the Vrajavasis are not atheists. They don't accept Krishna as God because Krishna is just one of them. But then the whole concept of Vedic culture is there in Vrindavan also. That's why we have Radharani worshipping Suryadev. In the Radhika Ashtakam, it is described that Krishna Nitya Sangamartha Padma Bandhu Radhika. Krishna Nitya Sangamartha. To get the Sangha of Krishna, what is Radharani doing? Padma Bandhu Radhika. Here the word Radhika doesn't mean Radharani, it means worshipping. She's doing Aradhana of what? Padma Bandhu, the friend of the lotuses, the sun god. So Anandavan Champu describes that when in 23rd chapter, it is described, the 23rd chapter of the 10th canto is described that the various gopis went and worshipped Katyayani. So he describes that Radharani was not among those. Because Radharani worshipped Suryadev. The other gopis who were younger, who were not yet, who were much younger and who were not yet married, they worshipped Katyayani. So the point is, they may worship Katyayani, they may worship Suryadev, but it is all for the purpose of Nanda Maharaj and Yashodamai are worshipping for the protection of Krishna. For the gopis are worshipping for the attainment of Krishna. So actually, their demigod worship is not a dushana, it is a bhushana. For us, at the sadhaka level, if we do demigod worship, it is often because our faith in Krishna is not so strong. Okay, maybe Krishna may not fulfill this. So I will go to some other demigod. That's why our acharyas discourage us from worshipping the demigods. So our worship of demigods can be a dushana. But for the pure devotees of Krishna, their idea is somehow or the other I have to attain Krishna. And actually their worship of demigods is a demonstration of the intensity of their desire for Krishna. They don't have any doubt in Krishna. Krishna is their ultimate goal. They have no other goal except Krishna. And they feel for the attainment of Krishna, we will do anything and everything. We will do everything within our power and we will invoke all other powers that are not directly within us, within our control. So actually their worship of the demigods is an opulence of their devotion. So they are so desperate to attain Krishna, to protect Krishna by all means possible. So then Yashodama and Ananda Maharaj come back and they start praying to Narasimhadev. Please protect Krishna. Please protect Krishna. Please let Krishna stay safe. So actually, this is the sweet, endearing nature of Vrindavan, where actually, as the Bhagavad Gita 15.1 describes, Urdhva Moolam Adha Shakam Ashvattham Prahuravayam Chandam Siyasya Paranani Yastam Vedasa Vedavet. So it's described that there is an upside down banyan tree. But this is a very mysterious metaphor. It describes that actually this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So everything that is present in this material world is also present in the spiritual world. Not everything, because there are certain things we have perversions. Just like there might be a beautiful face, a person may originally have a beautiful face. But when there is a reflection, in the reflection there can be distortions on the face. The face may not have any scars, but in the reflection there might appear to be wrinkles and scars and all those things. So it's not that every, for example, there are many perversions in this world. There is the male-female attraction in the spiritual world. That is there in this material world also, as the male-female attraction. But in this world, when the sensuality and lust becomes excessive, then there may be a sensual attraction between males and males and females and females. Now this is a perversion. This is not present in the spiritual world. But the point is, whatever is in the originality and the purity in the spiritual world has a counterpart in the material world. And there are also perversions in the material world. But when we understand the bhakti universe as is revealed in the Bhagavatam, then we understand how actually Krishna as God is a person in a sense just like us. So this understanding brings intimacy and accessibility to our relationship with Krishna. It brings intimacy and accessibility. Now we cannot, Prabhupada says, you cannot pray to the sky is great, but how can we develop a relationship with the sky and pray to the sky? That is not possible. So we have to have a person with whom we can become, who is accessible to us and with whom we become intimate. So now, in general, when people go from the path of bhakti to the path of, from material life to spiritual life. So many times people, there is karma kanda, there is jnana kanda, which is the neutral level, and there is the upasana kanda bhakti, which is the transcendental level. So in the path of jnana kanda, everything material is negated and rejected. So now I am discussing the third part of the class, that is the significance of rites of passage in the life of a devotee. So we discuss the rite of passage of Krishna taking charge of the cows. So we will discuss that now. The significance of rites of passage in a devotee's life. So actually on the path of jnana, everything material is considered to be illusory, to be useless, to be rejected. And based on this understanding, one just rejects the material world and focuses on Brahman. Now bhakti also understands that, in bhakti also we understand ultimately the material world has to be rejected. But the process is not so much of rejection as connection. It is not so much of rejection as connection. So we don't reject the material to attain the spiritual. We utilize the material as a platform to go to the spiritual. As a platform to go to the spiritual. So there are three prominent attitudes towards the world. It's captivity, futility and utility. Captivity means in the path of karmakanda, people are captivated by the material world. Oh, there are so many pleasures in this world. People don't even think about God's existence. And even if God exists, their primary idea is, God should take care of my enjoyment in this world. So, that is the idea. You know, Krishna is performing his pastimes in the spiritual world and Krishna is inviting us back. But when we are captivated by the material world, even if we approach Krishna, what is our approach? Krishna, I want to perform pastimes in this world. You please help me here. So, that is the idea. That is when we are captivated by the material world. So that is the level of karma kanda. Then, at the level of jnana, there is futility. How everything material world is futile. Everything is useless. All relationships are false. All forms are false. All emotions are false. Just give them up. And then beyond this futility is utility. Utility means actually even the material can be used as a platform to launch oneself towards the transcendental. To launch oneself towards the transcendental. And that actually is the beauty of bhakti. The beauty of bhakti is that we can keep doing material activities, and not exactly material activities just like the materialists do, but in form, the activities of a devotee may be similar to that of the non-devotees, materialists. But the purpose is different. And in material life, there are many rites of passage. So, what happens to those rites of passage for a transcendentalist? On the path of jnana, actually all the rites of passage are rejected. So, Buddhism is like a shadow of the path of jnana. Why a shadow? Because in the path of jnana there is the conception of Brahman. In the Buddhism there is the idea of shunya. So even Brahman is not there. That's why it's a shadow of the path. But still it also focuses on the rejection of the material world. So for example, there is the festival of the birthday of devotees. Birthdays in this world. Now birthdays at one level are just material events. At a material level, they are very significant rites of passage. People may have big birthday bashes and they may call all their friends and celebrate. Now, if we look at birthdays from the jnani point of view, from the point of view of rejection, so in Buddhism, at least in Theravada Buddhism, the idea is that actually all of us are soul. Shri Radha, Gopinath, Bhagavan, and all of us are, they don't have, they all of us have gone through so many births. Buddhism is a very peculiar theologically. They have the idea of reincarnation without soul. So who reincarnates is a question that 2500 years of theologizing has not been able to answer in their philosophy. But they have the idea that we have gone through so many lifetimes till now. So every day has been a birth, every day could be a birthday, every day could be a dead day. So there is no need to celebrate birthdays. So actually this is at a philosophical level correct. And there's one senior ISKCON leader who told me that when he came to ISKCON, he was joined in London. So in the early days of ISKCON, you know, we had that attitude. That from we wanted to get out of captivity, so there was the idea of futility. Everything in the material world is futile. So he came to the temple, he was a brahmachari at that time. Now he's a senior sannyasi in the moment, sannyasi guru in the moment. So he was telling, the first day when he had joined as a brahmachari in the temple, his first birthday as a devotee was there. And he came to the temple president and he told, Prabhuji, today is my birthday. And that devotee said to him, with all due respect to the devotee, he says, so, how old is your stool bag? How old is your stool bag? So he said, I got a culture shock. You know, people have the idea of birthdays. You know, you have candles and you have so much celebration. So he said, this bad. Don't you know? Tvanmam sarudirasnayu medo majjasti samhato vinmutra puyeramatam kriminam kiyadantaram. He says, actually this body is filled with stool and urine and bile and mucus, and why are you so caught up with the body? If you are caught up with the body, kriminam kiyadantaram. What is the difference between you and a worm? So, he got a complete culture shock. So now, this is philosophically valid. It's philosophically, it is defensible. But actually, it is from the emotional point of view, it is very insensitive. Because, you know, we cannot attain the transcendental level without first coming to the human level. We cannot attain transcendence without coming to goodness. So now if somebody is truly so transcendental that one doesn't care for birthdays, and if we are in a community where nobody cares for birthdays, that is fine. That is fine. But actually, many times the rejection of the material rites of passage is not because of transcendence, it is simply because of insensitivity and carelessness. See, just like a simple example to illustrate this point, the scriptures talk so much about how there should not be attachment in householder life. You know, say a man should not be attached to the woman and the woman should not be attached to the man. Now, if in Kali Yuga we present this to people, you know, people as it is, you know, they have so many problems with family life, they want to divorce and get rid of the family attachments. Isn't it? So actually the Bhagavatam is talking at a level where there is a strong family connection, and then that connection is an obstacle to transcendence. But Kali Yuga we have a level where there is no strong family connection only. So, you know, the hippies, they had no family attachments. But that was not because they were transcendental. Because they were so irresponsible in one sense, isn't it? So actually, the Bhagavatam is talking about a particular level from which one can rise upwards. So, just before Radhanath Maharaj went for the Yatra, he was talking about how, you know, he was talking about how his father, he would tell his father to give a flower to his mother on the marriage anniversary. Now, somebody says marriage anniversary is a completely mundane event. So, what is so significant about it? But actually, the point is that we do have to come to the human level, we have to come to the transcendental level, and human emotions can also be spiritualized. Now, if the marriage anniversary or the birthday or other such material emotion, material lights of passage, if they are celebrated without any transcendental element in it, then they are mundane. But if they are celebrated with transcendence within it, then they can be dovetailed on the path of devotional service. Now, one of my close friends, he told me that after he became a devotee, he was a devotee for 2-3 years, and then he joined a company, and he was working in the company. And he said for 3 years, when he was in the company, you know, every year on his birthday, all his company colleagues would wish him, and all his relatives and parents would wish him, but no other devotee wished him. So now, this could be because everybody is transcendental. If everybody is transcendental, they have all my respects. But it just, you know, from that person's point of view, what does it feel? It feels that nobody cares for me. These non-devotees, they care for me more than devotees. So actually that's not true. No, that's not true, because actually devotees care for us not just as the body, mind and soul. They completely care for us. Whereas the materialistic people don't even actually care for our body. They just, it's a formality at the material level, and that formality is utilized for material purposes. So they may just have their planners where they remember there is this birthday. They may not even care for the person, but still, as a formality they will wish. But the point is, love is really not felt till it is expressed. Love is not felt till it is expressed. And the rites of passage are means by which we can express love. So, and at one time there was a discussion between two senior devotees about whether there should be a celebration of birthday. This is the whole idea of blowing candles and cutting cakes. This is in the Brahmachari ashram. Whether the Brahmachari's birthday should be celebrated. So there was one group of devotees who said, this whole idea of candle and cake and everything, it is non-Vedic. It is not mati, it is mundane. Some other devotee says, no, actually we should do this. So both these groups of devotees went to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. And Radhanath Maharaj said, yes, as far as the form is concerned, the cake and the candle and everything, this is not Vedic. But as far as what the form is meant to convey, that is our feelings of appreciation and value and care and love, they are not mundane. They are actually the essence of bhakti. They are the sixfold exchanges of bhakti. So rites of passages in a devotee's life can become means of exchanging devotional emotions. So if we just neglect all the material rites of passage, then what will happen is we will not have occasions where we express love and care for others. So actually speaking, no, we go and do college programs in IIT. So one of the IIT boy was telling that, you know, in their colleges, when a boy has a birthday, how do they celebrate the birthday? They have the idea that all the friends of the boy come and they cheer him, and their way of cheering is they all come and kick him on the backside. And that is the way of celebrating the birthday. You know, this is such a terrible rite of passage. There is some significance. But he said when he came to the youth centers, you know, how devotees celebrate birthdays? Actually, devotees will celebrate birthdays. Not all devotees may have a big festival. That may not be necessary. That's certainly not necessary in the Brahmachari ashram. But whatever it is, actually, we appreciate each other as devotees, as human beings, and encourage each other. So the rites of passage are essentially meant to create favorable samskaras. Samskaras are mental impressions. So the rites of passage, whether they are Vedic or non-Vedic, their ultimate purpose is to create samskaras, to create impressions which are conducive for one's moral and spiritual growth. So, the material rites of passage can also be used for spiritual purposes. But one has to be very careful that one is using them for a spiritual purpose. So sometimes, one devotee was telling me that there is in a community, there are several thousand devotees in a community, and practically every other day there is somebody's birthday. And then every alternate day is like a birthday celebration. Then things become a little too mundane at that time. So then there has to be always a balance. So we may not have a birthday celebration for every occasion, but the important thing is we need to be able to express emotions. And the purpose of rites of passage is actually the creation of impressions through the expression of emotions. And in one sense, there can be varieties of rites of passage. So in the devotional life, the festivals are very important rites of passage for us. We don't celebrate our birthdays, but we celebrate Krishna's birthdays. Why? Because those are times when we come together, we see the beautiful decoration of Krishna as it is today on the occasion of Gopashtami, as it was during Sharad Purnima. And these create impressions. These create samskaras. So as devotees, our primary focus is the Krishna-centered rites of passage. It is the festivals marking Krishna's events. They all create impressions, samskaras in our heart. And these samskaras attract us towards Krishna. They become our defining memories. As devotees, the essence of bhakti is to make our memory our treasury. The essence of bhakti is to make our memory our treasury. You know, when we want to say we should always remember Krishna, how can we remember Krishna unless we have devotionally stirring, inspiring, moving memories about Krishna in our heart? So for example, now most of the devotees have gone for yatra. So yatra is a rite of passage. And yatra creates powerful devotional impressions. And for those of us who don't go for yatra also, you know, seeing so few devotees in the temple and having to work so hard to maintain all the other services, that is also a rite of passage. That also creates impressions in its own way. But the point is that rites of passage are very important. And just as the Vrajavasis celebrate, the devotees also celebrate Krishna's rites of passage. And among the devotee community also, there may be rites of passage that may be celebrated. But their purpose is to express love, value, care, belonging, by which the devotee community comes closer to each other and comes closer to Krishna. Now, one of the purposes of ISKCON, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the charter of seven purposes, is to bring people closer to each other and closer to the Supreme Person. So that is what is done through rites of passage. So thank you very much. I'll quickly summarize. I started by talking about how the Krishna's revelation of his intimacy can be quite bewildering. Because Krishna as God doesn't reveal his majesty. He reveals primarily his intimacy, his sweetness. And that's how Brahmaji gets bewildered. Then I discussed about the Gopashtami pastime. How Yashodamai was first anxious, but then she gave up her anxiety out of her loving concern for Krishna and his future. And then I discussed elaborately about rites of passage. How we on the path of jnana, one rejects everything material, so that one can go to the spiritual level. But in the path of bhakti, rather than captivity or futility, there is utility. We utilize whatever is material possible and feasible for our spiritual advancement. And material rites of passage can also be used in Krishna's service, in devotional service. So as devotees, we focus primarily on Krishna-centered rites of passage. But along with that, we also have other rites of passage, all of which bond us closer to each other as devotees and closer to Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any one question? Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanande. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.